Today's episode is brought to you by something deliciously green and oh so good for your furry family members.
Introducing honest-to-goodness plant snacks, a family of plant-based dog treats that are not just tasty, but packed with a purpose.
Crafted by veterinarians, these treats are a rainbow of whole food ingredients. We're talking wholesome fruits and veggies you can actually see, plus probiotics and marine microalgae oil for that extra health kick.
From happy feet for healthy mobility to mellow belly for delightful digestion, and let's not forget way to glow for that shiny, luscious hair. There's a treat for every need.
And for our wise woofers, there's golden years for senior support, good vibes for comforting cuddles, and buddy boost for superhero immunity.
What's super cool about these snacks? They're crunchy, and they come in over 50 tail-wagging treats per bag.
Plus, they're made with sustainable, responsibly sourced ingredients right here in the USA. No synthetic additives, fillers, or byproducts here.
So if you want to sprinkle a little more goodness into your pet's day, give honest-to-goodness plant snacks a try.
To learn more, check out WFYoung.com.
That's WFYoung.com.
Attention, independent pet pros. Let me introduce you to the Pet Shop Girls, presented by Pet Product News.
Hey, everybody, I'm Sherry.
And I'm Carly.
Welcome to the Pet Shop Girls podcast.
Today, we are excited and honored to have a leader in the pet industry and someone who knows how to do distribution differently. The CEO of Pan Pacific Pet, Phil Clausen, who boasts an impressive 33-year tenure in the pet distribution industry, all with Pan Pacific. Phil began his journey in the warehouse, swiftly transitioning into a sales role. Throughout the years, Phil's involvement spanned across various departments, including purchasing, sales, marketing, and software development, offering him a comprehensive understanding of the company's operations. Progressing through the ranks, Phil ascended to the positions of general manager and ultimately CEO. Under his leadership, Pan has experienced remarkable growth, expanding from 4 employees to over 140 today. They now collaborate with over 150 vendors to distribute pet products across retail stores in Western Canada. Pan Pacific operates 2 warehouse facilities in Western Canada, with plans to occupy over 350,000 square feet of warehouse space by late 2025. Notably, their freezer capacity is set to increase from 12,000 square feet to 23,000 square feet over the next year and a half. Outside of work, Phil is a devoted family man. He shares his journey with his wife, Audrey, and their 3 boys, 2 of whom actively contribute to the business. Together, they cherish their 2 beloved dogs, Roxy and Louie. So please help us in welcoming Phil to the Pet Shop Girls.
Great to be here. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yes. You know what? We wanted to, if you guys have looked at the title of this episode, we are talking about distribution done differently because Pan does things differently. And I'm sure you hear that all the time, Phil, when you're out and about chatting with brands, being at different trade shows, you're hearing about just how different Pan really is.
Yeah, it's gratifying. I've been doing this 32, 33 years. When we started out, we were just a small company. I think we had 2 product lines. And so to grow over the years and then to be able to build some really cool things inside our distribution has been a lot of fun. And so when we hear vendors and customers give us feedback that we are doing amazing things, it's just, yeah, it's really gratifying.
Yeah, of course. And I know I run around to shows all the times. Any brands I meet, I'm like, you got to talk to Pan. They do it different. Very innovative company. And I guess, so that leads me to my first question. And it is a competitive market. So I'm wondering, in your opinion, what do you think sets Pan apart from other distributors? And what makes your approach to customer service so unique?
Yeah, so I'll talk about our vendor relations first. The uniqueness that we have with our vendors is the amount of time that we spend cultivating those relationships. So we have three people in our company that part of their job is to make sure that they're in constant contact with our vendors. And we have almost 150 vendors now that we deal with, or 150 brands. There might be brands that are together with one vendor. But the core value that we have is making sure that they feel cared for. We have 13 reps in the field. In Western Canada, only has about 13 million people in it. So basically a rep for every million people, which we feel is a really good ratio. And so the contact we have and the services that we provide to our reps. So we have in our territory 30 different vendor reps that represent various different products. We built an iPad app internally where our reps have the iPad app, and we have over 450 stores that we've given iPads to that either order through the iPads or get all our catalogs through the iPad. And we also give iPads to our vendor reps, or they have their own and then we download our app onto them. And it allows them to do all the deals, all the monthly deals through the iPad, which automatically then upload into our system, or they can do credits on them, which just gives such a cohesive program for our vendor reps. We have a veterinary company as well. Yeah, so just the care, the opportunities they have to work with our technology, and the amount of reps that we have helping to represent their brands. Because when you get a lot of different brands, the problem becomes, can you properly represent each of those brands? So not only do we have a big group of account managers, we also have a pretty large marketing department and 5 to 6 people in that department that are making sure that the vendors' promotions, all of their copy is done right. So that's been a huge part of what we've had to develop and grow in our business. On the customer side, when it comes to working with them, our number one goal as a distributor is to provide excellent service to our customers. That's the key thing that I think can differentiate us, is our fill rates, which during the pandemic, it was hard to hit high fill rates, but post-pandemic, with all of our vendors, we have over 96% fill rate. Because of our warehouse management system, we have over 99.5% accuracy rate, so people aren't getting mistakes on their invoices. And our goal is to provide a seamless relationship with our customers. So if they have a problem with anything, it's basically no questions asked. We want them to have an experience like you would have with Costco, where if you have a problem with something, you can return it and they don't ask any questions. Obviously, we have lots of stores that buy a lot of things from us, so sometimes we have to go through a bit of a process, but our goal is to provide a seamless experience with our customers. Then, because we have so many account representatives, the relationship we have with our customers is just enhanced by the fact that they see us a lot. And so if they have any issues, any problems, they're able to talk to their rep consistently. Plus, then we can properly train, build out our brands. So that's been a huge thing. Our technology, we have iPad ordering, we have web ordering, we have import, EDI.
Robots picking orders.
Yeah, I was going to say, Carly was telling me that not only do you have all this other technology that you're using, but your facility sounds really impressive. You have robots there?
Yeah, it's really cool. We partnered with a company called Adabotics, and our largest distribution center is in Calgary, Alberta. And so we've installed this state-of-the-art robotics picking system where basically it has 24, they call them ants, because it's like they built it like an ant colony. And these robots, which are like 2 feet by 2 feet, they climb columns and they pick bins out of these columns and return the bins back to the picker. And it just allows us to pick at such a increased level of speed. Plus, our accuracy is so great because the picker isn't having to walk around the warehouse to pick things. And sometimes you might pick the wrong thing in a wrong section. Now, we have UPC barcode scanning, but it's still, they don't always scan every item. This way, the exact item that you need is coming directly to the picker. And every 10 seconds, another item comes to the picker. So our speed is increased, our accuracy is increased. It's such a cool system to operate, and it works really smoothly. So we've been really happy with that.
I was going to say too, before I see you chomping at the bit, Sherry, I was going to say, when you're talking about your customer service and your reps really being diligent about servicing your accounts, I can speak personally to that. I'm going to give a shout out to my PAN rep, Ray. He's my favorite. I keep telling him he's not allowed to retire until I close my store, because Ray is awesome. But we meet monthly. Without fail, we meet monthly. Ray makes the trek to my province and he services Saskatchewan and Manitoba, but every month without fail. And then we regularly talk on the phone. If ever I need anything, Ray is a phone call or a text away. So yeah, PAN really sets the bar when it comes to serving their clients and creating that partnership. I believe is what PAN is really good at, is creating the partnership. I feel like a partner of PAN, where I've worked with other distributors. I didn't feel like a partner. I felt like an inconvenience or a customer that, we have to deal with you again.
One of the many. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the many. No.
Yeah. Do you guys want to expand down into Texas? Y'all sound really cool.
Yeah. We have our geography that we're in, and our goal is to just make it the best experience possible for our customers. Appreciate the shout out to Ray there. Ray's a great guy and certainly has a huge territory that he has to cover. He's traveling all the time, but does a great job.
Yeah. Yeah. That it looks like Odyssey has to move to Saskatchewan, Sherry.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. Okay. Here's a question that I wonder about with any distributor. How do you pick what brands you're going to carry? Do you have like a set values that you have for your entire distribution system? What do you look for in a brand? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, for sure. We have a team of five that actually work through all the brands that we have opportunities with. But first and foremost, we are a company that develops brands for companies. We don't have our own private label brands. We chose to stick with working with vendors instead of building our own brands. And lots of distributors out there develop their own private labels, and we've chosen not to, simply because that way we can focus on each vendor and they don't feel like we're favoring our own brands over theirs. And that's actually allowed us to pick up a lot of products, just because vendors eventually get scared with other distributors that may have their own brands. But especially now, 10, 12 years ago, as we were just developing a lot of an increase in brands that we would carry, you're less choosy because you just want to build up your business. But now that we've built it up to the level that we have, we're very interested in what we call the fourth category. Kibble has obviously the biggest market share in pet specialty, but there's a lot of new and innovative things that have been developed outside of Kibble, such as freeze-dried, dehydrated, steam-dried now, and raw. And so those are the food areas that we look at expanding. If there's new kibble brands that are starting right now, it's pretty difficult for us to bring them in because we have our book of kibble brands now and we're not really adding to that. But we're definitely looking for brands that choose pet specialty as their market to go into. We're very aligned with vendors that see pet specialty as their focus. Obviously, a certain amount of online shopping is happening now. In Canada, it's greatly reduced over what's in the States because a lot of vendors have just chosen not to go online in Canada. In the US, it was different as that expanded and grew. Definitely one of our biggest considerations when we pick up product lines is that they're focused on pet specialty. And the second thing we look at, especially if it's a food brand, is will they put vendor representatives into our territory? Because it's very important to have a augmentation between the distributor reps and the vendor reps. That's the way product lines really grow, because our reps can't focus on everything all the time. And especially for training and knowledge about the brand, that's done best through vendor reps. So we work with our vendors to have a rep in our territory whenever possible.
So I always, when I'm chatting with brands or anybody else, I often mention how innovative and leading edge Pan is. And I truly believe that. Like, I do believe that Pan is setting that bar. And now you guys are a bigger distributor. And there's brands out there that I'm sure would love to fill some of your warehouse space. But how do these brands that maybe you've never heard of, how do they catch your attention to be considered for one of the products that Pan would consider carrying?
Yeah, that's a great question. Probably the biggest way that we see new products is at the Global and Super Zoo trade shows. And we just got back from Florida at the Global Show. There was 12 of us from Pan that went. So we try and bring a big contingent from our reps to our buyers to the sales managers. We try and get everybody there that can look at new products. So that's a key way. But there are product lines out there that have good people that contact us. And we're constantly getting contacted by brands, which then goes through our brand process where we determine if it's something that we can bring in. Also, there's retailers like you that point brands to us or bring them into our awareness. And then we look at them and see the validity of bringing them into our warehouses. But certainly, every time we bring a brand in, it's an investment. And we have to have warehouse space for them. We have to have cash flow to buy the amount of inventory necessary to start it up. So we have to do our due diligence to make sure that those things are done properly and we can launch it properly. So yeah, it's a multifaceted process to get brands in, but certainly one that we take seriously.
So I wanted to bring this up, and I know Carly has dealt with it a lot more than I have, but exclusivity, it's a hot topic. And I've got one distributor that carries a certain product, but they can't sell it to me because I have to buy it from a different one. But what's your take on exclusivity among distributors and how do you navigate that?
So just to qualify that, are you talking about brands that would have exclusive distributors and they wouldn't work with other distributors? Is that the question?
Yeah, that would be on the distributor level, yes. And because we've dealt with it on a retailer's level, but we'd like to know, how do you feel about that? If a brand said, I only want to be exclusive with you, or say you wanted to bring in a brand to your portfolio, but they were like, oh no, we have exclusivity with so-and-so over there. How do you handle that?
Yeah, so it's interesting. There's different perspectives out there from multiple vendors. So some vendors look at exclusivity with a distributor as a very positive thing because they know they're going to get that distributor's attention. We obviously, as a distributor, like exclusive products because then we know that all the effort and energy we're putting into them actually benefits us because if another distributor has it, then we could put a lot of effort into it, but another distributor could just drop the price and then we lose the sales at that store. But there are vendors out there that look at exclusivity as something that they don't want to do because it gives them the ability to have multiple sources of products. So if one distributor is out of something, or if that distributor loses a relationship with a retailer, then they have other distributors that can pick up the slack. As a distributor myself, we tend to look for products that we have exclusive just because of the energy and effort that it takes to grow a brand. It's much more aligned with our ability to sell and then know that when we sell, that retailer is going to buy it from us. So we prefer that, but there are a lot of brands out there that are significant enough that not having exclusivity is still something that we're interested in.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. And you've probably seen your fair share after 33 years in the industry, Phil. I'm wondering what advice you would give to those who are just starting out in the pet industry today.
And are you talking at distribution level or at?
I'm thinking there's so many different facets of the pet industry. And we met a bunch at Global, from one person operations to hundreds of people operations. And I'm thinking more of those people that are just get. I met another guy. He came from the fashion industry. And his first words to me were, "This is a whole different language in the pet industry." I'm like, "Yes, it is." So I'm wondering for anybody, kind of anybody in the pet industry, because you've had a variety of different roles.
Yeah.
And so you've been able to see different pet pros in the industry at all different levels.
Yeah.
What would kind of be your advice to somebody just starting out?
So let's take a retailer just as first go at this. One thing that we do is we work with our retailers and help them on the business aspect of their store. Because a lot of people that get into pet retail are pet lovers first. And they get into it because it's just something that is so much a part of their lives that they want to help other people and make sure that they're getting the best products. I would suggest that people trying to get into pet specialty really bring around them mentors that can help them on the business side. And that could be distributors, that could be vendors, that could be getting to know other retailers in their area. It's interesting because in pet specialty, there's not an association where retailers get to know each other. The biggest way you can get to know other retailers is by coming to local trade shows. Like we have the Pets Canada show that we're a big part of. And when retailers come to that, we try and bring them together so that they can share best practices. We've developed what we call the PAN experience. COVID took it down, but we're working on starting it up again, where we will bring in retailers that aren't in competitive markets. So maybe one from the province of BC and then Alberta, Saskatchewan. We bring them together and then we spend a day or two with them, helping them understand how to increase their margins, how to increase their foot traffic, things that we get the retailers to share their own best practices. And I think for somebody just starting out, you need to have an open mind to collaborate with other retailers and to work with your vendors to really understand the ins and outs of the business side of it.
I've never heard about this experience, the PAN experience that you're talking about. That is amazing. I applaud you for that because, look, when I first started out, it was 2006, and there wasn't all these Facebook groups now. Because you can join these industry Facebook groups and they're exponentially helpful, even though you're not face to face with somebody. But that sounds invaluable in and of itself. And I do want to say, when I first started out too, I didn't know what I was doing. And I had a rep from a distribution company that had been in the industry for a long time. And she helped me so much she helped me pick out what to put in each category, you know, what the best sellers were, what wasn't. Like, if she knew something probably wouldn't do well in my store, she was honest. And it created a loyalty to that distributor that lasts to today, even though she's not even with them anymore. So I think being honest is a big thing. And it sounds like you guys are very transparent and are helping the retailers succeed. Because honestly, if we're not here, then you wouldn't have anybody to distribute to, right?
That's our biggest philosophy. I've often said, as a distributor, we're nobody's customer. The vendors see us as a conduit to get to the customer, which is the retailer, right? The distributor is the company that provides the investment into the product, plus gets the product to the retailer. Now, we do have a lot of vendors now that really realize the invaluable nature of a good distributor, but it isn't always that way. So we have to make sure that we're very aware of the relationship that we have with our vendors and how important that is, and not to take them for granted. So we, as a distributor, when a new store is opening, our goal is to make sure that store has the products that they need to succeed. And that's not necessarily products that Pan carries. It's obviously we want them to bring in our brands, and we want them to be successful with our brands. But just like you said, some places that we will set up, raw might not be the best thing for them. Maybe they're a feed store in outlying areas where they're very rural, and starting with freezers, it might not be the best investment for them. Certainly, we found that raw is going across all sorts of demographics now, but we have to be careful, because if we put a bunch of products into a retailer and they don't sell, that retailer is going to look at us as taking advantage of them, especially when they're just starting out and there's so much of an investment that they need to come up with, and they're probably indebted to either a bank or family or however they happen to get the money to start a store. So yeah, that's been a huge part of what we feel like we add value to retailers with. The Pan experience, as we've done multiple of them, we just saw relationships get built among retailers that are alive to this day and have helped people, because you feel alone a lot of the time as a retailer. You're just... Yeah. You're on your own. You're receiving product. You're selling product. You're taking product back. And you're probably working 7 days a week for a lot of your early startup days, and maybe for a long time. So we have so much respect for our retailers. We know how hard they work, and we just value them, because without them, we don't have a business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can't wait for my Pan experience at the new facility.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're getting ready to start them up again.
Nice.
You've been in the industry for a long time, even longer than me, because I've got 23 years in it, surprisingly. But so you've seen it evolve, right? How would you say where it was and where it is, and where do you see it going in the future?
I look back to the early days for me, which was like starting in the early 90s. And back then, there was really just a few brands that retailers had to sell. You had IAMS and Nutro and Science Diet. And then just this innovation started to happen within the industry, because I think people with creative minds saw that there was an opportunity to start brands. And you saw how many brands have we seen that just started with somebody in their kitchen making something for their pet.
And Green Juju.
Yeah.
Stella and Chewy's, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. All throughout.
Primal. Even Primal.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember Nature's Recipe back in the day was started by a guy in his house because his dog had allergies. So many of those stories are out there. And what it did was it brought all this innovation into our industry and created this broad range of products and experiences for consumers that attracted so many of them because they realized that Pet Specialty was going to provide them with the either the nutrition or the fun or the learning that they needed and that they were yearning for, because pets just became more and more a part of the family. So I watched that develop over the years and really bring innovation to our industry. As far as where I see the industry going, we're constantly watching for what the consumers' trends are as far as where they want to buy product. And obviously online, they're searching more and more for information. And I know, Carly, that you have this amazing TikTok and social media presence where you provide so much information and valuable insight into product lines and ways to keep your pet healthy. And I don't know, Sherry, do you do that as well? Or is Carly got a social media presence? Or do you?
No, I think my social media is above average. Carly's TikTok famous. Yeah, I can't. I don't stand, you know, up against her on that one. So yeah, she's amazing. What she's doing on TikTok is the best I've seen in the industry.
Yeah, that's awesome. One thing that we have been really involved with is trying to bring an online opportunity for our independent pet specialty retailers. And we've worked with a few different platforms to try and bring that to Pet Specialty. It's hard for people, retailers with one or two stores, to put the investment into building out a web store. But I think it's so important for retailers to be looking at that, because obviously online is not going to go away. I think that consumers' experience that they have with Pet Specialty is still very important, because there's so much knowledge that they gain from that. So as far as the future goes, we want to be a valuable asset to our retailers to help them navigate where their customers are going to come from and help develop those technologies with them to properly sustain their businesses in the future.
And that's a good point, Phil, too, because when I was first setting up my business plan for House of Paws, I knew that online was part of my business plan, but it was like phase three of House of Paws. I wanted to get the brick and mortar down packed before I started trying to sell online and deliver and all these things. COVID turned phase three into phase right now, because I opened 4 months before COVID happened. And very quickly, I created a Google spreadsheet form that I was sending out to my customers, because though we had a website, we weren't selling online. We just wanted that online presence. But very quickly I went, what am I doing online? Exactly like you said, it's not going away. And so I made the investment during COVID to have all of my products added. And we were actually the first retail pet store in Regina to have a true e-commerce website. Mm. And now we know that there are some customers that want to shop online and some customers that want to come in store and some customers that want to have that blended experience, but we offer both. And so I think if I could give a tip for anybody starting out in the industry in retail, it would be to have that online store as part of your offering, because if you don't, it is like a heart and lung transplant to take a POS system out of a pet store and put in a new one that's compatible with a website. So if you have that kind of in your mind
I agree because I did that. I actually had that problem. I just did my heart and lung transplant 3 years ago. So yeah. It's not fun. Yeah. Do your due diligence in the beginning so you don't have to do that.
Did COVID give you an added impetus for that, Sherry?
Yes. And I always wanted to, I didn't think I could compete with Amazon or anything like that, which you can't really, but Carly's proven that a small store can do a good business online. And yes, there's offerings in the pet industry to have stuff online. And during COVID, I did use those platforms, but they weren't connected to my POS system. So if I sold out of something in my store, it was like nearly impossible to update the other platform. And then somebody would buy it and then you don't have it. So I needed something that would connect the inventory amounts to the website. And it was all in one database, which I do have now.
And did you set that up yourself? Did you set all the items up and the descriptions and the pictures? And was that done by you and your staff?
Right. That's time consuming. Part of it was, and then part of it I jobbed out to an online source that did it for me.
My website dude.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Carly's website dude.
Yeah, he's Martin from Uganda. He's awesome. He's actually, prior to me opening a pet store, I was just trying to fill my empty soul because I had a life-sucking government job. And so I had found him that way and I got him to build one of my websites. And when I was opening House of Paws, I said, now I want to open a Shopify website. Do you build those websites? He's like, yep, here's an example. So he's been great. I reach out. I still have him. I've been working with this guy for 10 years. And anything that I reach out to him about, he's on it. He's very techie. I would not say that I'm techie. I can learn technology, but it's not intuitive for me. If you plunk a new piece of technology in my lap, I'm going to take a little while to figure it out. But so I like to have techie guys at my fingertips. But I'm wondering, Phil, with all of your experience in the pet industry, what do you believe are some of the biggest challenges that are facing the industry right now?
Yeah, I think online is the biggest challenge that our industry is facing and will face in the future. I think food, drug, mass, that whole category has realized for a while now how exceptional the opportunity is in pet. And you've seen them introduce a lot of new things into their offerings. So that's a threat to our industry. I think the key way that we combat that is by having very well-educated retailers. Because when you go into a grocery store and you're now looking at buying something that's $100 or more for a bag, the consumer is going to have difficulty spending that if they don't understand the benefits of it. But I think those two avenues of selling are definitely our biggest hurdles that we have to get through over the next few years. The nice thing that has happened is the complexity that the new brands are bringing to pet specialty. And I would encourage anybody that's looking at developing brands for pet specialty to look at the most complex things that they can design and create, because that's where pet specialty thrives. We need new, innovative things that allow us to be the reference, the pet specialty, like the specialist, what's in our name, because that allows us to have significance. And they're just, like you talked about Green Juju and products like that, that are just interesting for retailers to have on their shelves. There's so many brands that we work with now that are innovative and bringing things to market that grocery, food, drug, mass just won't bring in for a long time because they're too specific.
Yep.
All right. We're running out of time here. So I'm going to wrap this up with one more question. And then we have our rapid fire with you. So on a personal note, what's been the most rewarding aspect of your journey in the pet industry so far?
That's a great question. One of my biggest whys in my life, like why I exist, is to engage people. And I think the thing that I have realized over the decades that I've been doing this is that people in the industry are my friends. And I was down in Florida just last week, and one of the large retailers in Canada just threw his arms around me and just said, I love you.
Aww.
And that's something that, just as a human being, I don't think you get that in too many industries. It's been so rewarding to develop friendships because it's so much of our lives is our business. And I talk to so many people that come into the pet business that just go, oh man, this is a world I didn't know existed. I didn't realize that people could care for each other in their businesses and actually build deep, lasting friendships. And life's hard. It's a difficult struggle. There's so much mental health issues that we deal with, and just this life is about relationship, and you find it in this industry. It's beautiful.
Well put. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
For sure. I think that there's a ripple effect when you help somebody's pet because they are family. Mm-hmm. And I know, like I said, in my government job, I got to a point where I was like, I'm not making a difference in this world. I don't feel like I'm doing important work because I'm not helping people. And I think in the pet industry, when I can help a pet parent help their pet and improve their health, I have the ability to, I feel like I'm doing important work. Mm. And then all of the relationships, you're right. I've built already lifelong lasting friendships in this industry. And I've only been in it for 5 years. I'm a baby compared to you guys.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think pets provide such a positive experience for us as humans to mm-hmm. see these animals that love us unconditionally. So yeah, to be a part of bringing health to them is such a beautiful thing that we get to do.
Yeah, it's awesome. Okay, Phil, we're going to do our rapid fire with you. And that means that you are going to give us a pause up or a pause down based on just the item that we're going to give you. And this is either for pets or for people. The first one is catnip toys.
Pause up.
Pause up. Wait a minute. I sell those. Yes. Pause up.
Is this a loaded question? What is this?
I only get to say pause up or pause down. I don't get to elaborate. So
that's right. Unless you're BC and then you elaborate because BC just couldn't help himself. Okay. Long walks in the park.
Pause up.
Pause up. Rawhide chews.
Oh, you're really making me be political. We have definitely worked hard to bring alternative items into that market. I would say generally pause down.
That's a
nice political answer.
I gave you fireworks for that, Phil. Binging a TV series.
Oh, wow. That's quite the question. Oh, pause up.
Pause up, yeah. Pet birthday parties.
Oh, pause up.
Pause up, of course. And weekend road trips.
Pause up.
Pause up. We only gave All you right. one pause down. We only gave you. How about milk on your cereal?
Milk on your cereal? Oh, there's nothing better. Pause up.
Okay. See, you're next time Billy from Green Juju, you're going to have to ask that guy why he eats dry cereal only. He will not put milk on his cereal.
Wait, he I'm didn't sure put there's... juice?
Juice.
What?
I tried that once when I was out of milk.
I don't know how orange juice would taste on Shreddies. I don't want to find out.
I have tried it. It's not great.
Okay, this was awesome, Phil. Thank you so much. Now Sherry understands why I rave about Pan all the time because
I know it's all she talks about. All I hear is Pan.
That's awesome. Thank you.
That you guys really do distribution differently. I believe that Pan does set the bar. I think that we are very lucky in Western Canada to have such a fantastic partner with my store. And I want to thank you, Phil, for taking some of your time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us and help other pet pros understand more about Pan.
Thank you. It's been wonderful.
Thank you so much.
All right, you guys. Until next time, we will see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's it for this episode, Pet Pro.
Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe.
Just hit all the buttons.
So you never miss the podcast that makes you sit, stay, and beg for more.
The Pet Shop Girls.
If she uses that as an outtake at the end, I'd...
Sarah, you can't. You have to protect us. You have to protect us from Sherry's mouth.